We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the study session of the University City City Council to order on May 23rd. To anyone, do you have any changes to the regular agenda for tonight's public session? Hearing none, Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, this first item asks that you receive a presentation from our Public Works Director, Sinan Appleston, on a proposed expansion of the municipal parking lot number 4. This presentation was provided to the EDRST board, which is recommending the project. If the project is accepted by the mayor and council, my intention is to offer an amendment to the FY23 annual operating budget as a part of the budget process. Mr. Appleston.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Good evening. Municipal parking lot number 4 is located in the Delmar Business District to the north of it and outlined by Kingsland Avenue, Loop North Avenue, and Leland Avenue. This lot has 388 parking spaces, and until recently, 20 of these spaces were assigned for use under a lease agreement. But this agreement is currently terminated. 18 of these spaces are also on private property or allocated for private use because they are in private property areas. This results in 370 existing net available spaces in this lot. We had a project completed on this lot in 2014, spent about $800,000, resurfaced this lot, as well as created 5 additional spaces due to restriping and coordinated some alignments of walkways through this parking lot. This is the current layout of the parking lot and some areas that are indicated as right of way on it. These are some platted streets that were never consolidated on this lot for one private property. They still exist for public use, but they are now used as just parking aisles and parking rows. The proposed layout with the expansion is as depicted on this slide, that is incorporating straight-in spaces on the Loop North Avenue on the south side of it. At this location, there are some parallel parking spaces right now, so those spaces are proposed to be shifted to the north side of Loop North Avenue and to create the net number, maximum net number of spaces on the lot. Revised cost estimate, you may remember we discussed this item in December of 2020 at another study session. At the time, the south side of Loop North Avenue parallel parking spaces were an offset, and so they were not necessarily, they were reducing the number of net created parking spaces on this lot. Now with the moving of those spaces, parallel parking spaces, shifting them to the north side of Loop North Avenue, we can actually have a higher number of spaces created, that is 55. However, we'll need to give up one directional, one-way directional traffic on Loop North Avenue. So we will have to assign Loop North Avenue either as an access in or out. And that brings about the underlined last item of cost estimate line item, that is traffic signal modification and access rebuild on Kingsland Avenue. That would include the Kingsland Avenue, Loop North Avenue traffic signalized intersection. We're assuming that the county, that is the jurisdictional agency for that location, will require that that traffic signal be modified. And traffic signal modifications cost more money these days. And so that's adding to our cost estimate. I apologize for the error on this. The total line item should reflect $360,000. That's the sum of those numbers. But the rest of it is pretty much the construction is breaking up a sidewalk on the south side of Loop North Avenue and removing that sidewalk, east-west sidewalk from there so that we open up spaces, the room for parking spaces there, as well as design work for the same surveying and lot consolidation. That would include consolidating of all those parcels into one on this lot, so it's a clear definition of this lot going forward as a publicly available municipal parking lot. And the additional line item of miscellaneous work is lighting as needed for the newly created parking spaces and construction contingency, which we would rely on more these days because of the lack of reliability in the construction pricing. And so the number of spaces created is 55, and that calculates to about, I think about $6,500 per space created for this investment. And the project is proposed, as Mr. Rose indicated, for fiscal year 23, that is upcoming, and approved as such for that by the Economic Development Retail Sales Tax Board for funding usage. One item that I wanted to add to this discussion on the revenue side of things is that the True Hotel Development Project that is on the other side of King, on the west side of Kingston, that is in the works, is assigned some spaces on this lot to meet their parking requirement for that development project. And there are other similar projects that do the same. And so that creates additional revenue for this lot. However, it doesn't necessarily take away from the publicly available space assignments in that these spaces are first come, first serve. So no lot spaces are reserved for use for these development projects, but those development projects as other publicly available space use, they can utilize spaces in this lot. The one thing that I'd like to add is, as you see on this slide, the angled spaces on the bullet point. And so the angled spaces can create, because we are assigning a Loop North Avenue, one-way directional traffic on Loop North Avenue, practice is that the angled spaces is doable. But we have about 19 feet width Loop North Avenue. And the angled spaces give us about 3 feet in width. And so we really, if we didn't do angled spaces, we still have 16 feet available. And so angled spaces are not a must. If we have one directional traffic on Loop North Avenue. However, I would recommend doing it so that reduces the number of spaces created from 63 to 55. That is included. 55 is this what this proposal is based on. I would recommend angled spaces because the other side of Loop North will also have parked vehicles on it. And so it would be best to give as much room as available into maneuvering in and out of these spaces on the traffic circulation. And with that, I'm available. I would be happy to take any questions at this point.
Questions? Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I just had one. I was just curious what the current traffic flow on Loop North is. I know it's not a major thoroughfare by any stretch, so it's probably fairly insignificant, but do we expect any negative impact by making it one way?
Oh, that's an important question, Mr. Clay. We don't run high traffic volumes on Loop North Avenue, but it's utilized from the corner of Leland and Loop North. The best exit in and out of there is Loop North Avenue. So we will circulate some traffic around the parking lot this way, so they will add to their travel time. The traffic, depending on the direction of traffic assigned on Loop North Avenue, it can be an egress or ingress. They can still, that traffic can still take that aisle in and out. However, it would not be recommended. So traversing a parking lot, using it as a through access is generally not a good practice. So probably in the design phase, our design engineer will recommend having some safeguards for it so that only the parkers are using that aisle. So there will be some diminishing ability to go to traverse that area. However, the alternative is going down on Leland, pretty much south and onto Delmar back west, and that is not a problematic, necessarily problematic access that would add a long travel time to any vehicle, motorized travel. There was another question that came up at the ED board meeting that was actually about pedestrians more. Pedestrian access, therefore, with this proposal is eliminated from east to west because that loop north sidewalk is going away. And so for that, we really don't have a solution other than Delmar Boulevard sidewalks. However, we can look into creating some of that ability on possibly the north side of Leland Avenue. There's a wide green space with some disabled access improvements there that we did together with that 2014 project. And so it's just there are a lot of trees in that area. We need to meander probably around them, but we might be able to assign an access for pedestrians to have the east-west corridor still there after this improvement during design.
Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor Crowe. Mr. Alpheson, I have a couple of questions. The proposed parking spaces along Loop North, those would eliminate the existing sidewalk, correct?
Correct.
And so the whole parking lot would actually all of it like bleed into Loop North. There wouldn't be any kind of median dividing the parking lot from Loop North Drive, correct?
Mr. Cusick, there is a small tree lawn there. So our intention is to keep that tree lawn in place. The parking lots are infamous for heat islands. And so there are some not grown, but small trees in the area. We can live with the trees being there. And so there can be a small curbed area reserved in that area with the trees in it. And the available space is still sufficient for that, for us to create this plan.
So if people were leaving the parking lot, they wouldn't be able to just drive over to Loop North. They would have to go the one exit off of the parking lot that goes on the Loop North would stay there. Is that correct?
The exiting traffic, depending on the assignment of direction on Loop North, the exiting traffic can still make an out to Loop North and then turn west and out onto Kingsland Avenue, if Loop North is designated as a westbound only.
And if it's designated as eastbound only, then they could turn east and head over to what, I forget.
Leland. Yes, correct.
And then if we did have designated Loop North one way, regardless if it's east or west, what kind of impact is that going to be with pushing any people leaving the parking lot down the streets that are head in a northerly direction from Loop North? Do we have any idea about that?
You mean the streets Heman, Syracuse, and Leland there? So, Mr. Cusick, our proposal was to close off that access. So no vehicular access will exist in that area. So close that area off pretty much. And so there won't be any bleeding of parking lot traffic into the neighborhood streets in that area. However, there won't be any access the other way around either.
So you're saying that we would close off Heman and Leland and what was the other street?
Syracuse.
Syracuse. We would close those off at their southern end at North. And so that anyone that lives there would have to go.
Clemens. Correct. Correct. Clemens Avenue. And so that doesn't have to be done that way, but if we didn't do it, then we would lose probably about four or five parallel parking spaces.
Okay, very good. Thank you, sir.
Ms. Klein.
I just had a quick question, Mr. Alpheson. So what about the residential impact of the neighborhoods that are to the north of that street? Is that a factor? I mean, has that been considered? Or
Ms. Klein, I think, in our opinion, there have been this long-term issue of those streets not being plowed in the winter time as a first priority. So many of those residents parked on the lot because they knew that the lot would be a priority plow area. I think we can overcome that easily by revising our snow operations. And so other than that, there is really no real barriers. The area, if the area is curbed up, there will be only pedestrian access back and forth. But these residents, if they choose to, if they run out of parallel parking spaces on that street network and choose to park on a loop, this lot number 4, they will still be able to due to its close proximity.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hales.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. So if Loop North was an ingress eastbound, would there be a need for a traffic signal at all there?
Loop North is in only, actually, I think the real need for that signal will be due to the development of the True Hotel on the other side of the on Kingsland, because the plans called for making that signal a full intersection signal with that development. So that signal probably will still stay there for that use. If we have an entry only for Loop North, depending on, I think that will be a county decision, depending on the turning traffic, left turning traffic into Loop North on Kingsland, would there be a need for a protected phase there for that movement? I think they will then review that, evaluate for that, and if they see the need, then they will probably still require the signal.
Thank you. Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I just wanted to, my question came up with, along with Councilmember Hales and Cusick, in that do we have a preference on what direction Loop North is gonna go? And the reason I say that is because what I would actually think would be preference is that it would be a westbound lane, a street, simply because you don't wanna bring traffic back into the Loop area, you want traffic to go away. So do we have a preference in reference to how we want the direction of that street determined?
So Mr. Smotherson, one of the things that probably will determine that will be, as you see there, west of the access, the middle access on Loop North, there are a certain number of spaces. That's pretty much half of what we're creating. And so this is not an ideal layout for a westbound movement into that area, because somebody gets into that area and they cannot find a parking space, then they need to get out onto a busy street and then get back into the parking lot. We don't have that interior circulation availability, although I think at the design phase, we can look to open that up by removing some spaces on the west end. And instead of turning that lane out onto Kingsland, it can turn back into the parking lot and do it that way. So that will all, I think, be determined at the design phase more. But our goal will be to still maintain the number of spaces created with some safe movements like you described.
If I could ask just a few questions. Looks to me like the average cost per spot is give or take around $7,000, which in construction terms, is that a good deal? Bad deal? I honestly don't have much of a frame of reference. During the EDRST meeting, one of the members said they thought that was a great construction cost. And I really don't have a comparison.
I have numbers such as in Chicago, I know, and it's a different metropolitan area, they sell parking spaces in downtown at starting at $50,000 a pop. And so, of course, how it translates to St. Louis, this area is different, but it is a pretty reasonable cost for per parking space.
Yeah, I think, we're not probably as desirable as Chicago, that they've had a rough time, though, too, right now. Has there been any communication yet on what we're doing with the bus stop?
No.
Okay. And then and Leland right now, though, going into what I call the Fitz's parking lot, there's probably another name for it, but it'll still be two-way.
Leland is still two-way.
Okay. And then you mentioned briefly that I see the angled versus the straight in parking, but then you mentioned there'd be parallel parking on the north side, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Yeah. And by the way, to my colleagues from the second ward, this may be one of the things we do need to talk about. I would tend to think, but I don't want to make the judgment anecdotally, but I would tend to think that the neighbors to the north would probably just as soon not have the traffic flow coming into their neighborhood. But I don't know if that's necessarily people who can't find a spot in parking lot number four moving into their neighborhood. I really don't have much of any knowledge as to what they would prefer or not as far as that ingress or egress. So it's probably something we need to at least take a look at and see. I know that we've had some engagement with one of the landlords, but I think that was probably it. Otherwise, I'm hoping that we can move forward with this in some fashion, because this is probably one of those underutilized assets that would help us as we're recovering from the pandemic. What other questions do we have of Mr. Alpazlan? Any? Thank you very much. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, this next item asks that you receive a presentation on the pension board criteria. I have the finance director, Keith Cole, that will be presenting tonight. The situation that we find ourselves in is that there was a longtime employee that retired that was a member of the pension board. And as we began to look at the criteria for replacing that employee, we wanted to bring this forward to you to ensure that you are aware of the criteria and get your direction on whether you want any changes made to it. Mr. Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Good evening, everyone. Like Mr. Rose is stating, that this presentation on just to do a summary of the members of the pension board. And so we have two pension boards, the uniform and the non-uniform. The members before October 8th, 2012, the total number of members was 9. And then on October 8th, 2012, ordinance number 6899, that increased the total number of members from 9 to 11. And for the police and fire retirement fund, the following members are as follows. It's a total of 11, there are 7 citizens, one member of the police department, one member of the fire department, the city manager, which is a non-voting member, and a member of the city council, which is also a non-voting member. And with the non-uniform employees retirement fund, it makes up the same criteria, 7 citizens, and except with the non-uniform, we have 2 salaried employees of the non-uniform employees, the city manager and a member of the city council. Currently, the electing criteria of the members for the 7 citizens, the members, they shall serve for a term of 4 years. The citizen appointments are made at the first meeting of council in July, and the terms shall be staggered, that 2 of them shall expire at one time, 3 shall expire 1 year later, and then 2 shall expire 1 year thereafter. And then the citizen vacancies shall be filled in for the remainder of the terms as original appointed. And then the city manager will serve during his or her tenure of the office, and member of city council will be selected to serve from their colleagues. The employee members, they're selected by their peers, and currently under the ordinance number 6899, the employees will serve indefinitely. And then the current board members, there are five citizens, and we have two vacant citizen members currently. We have one city manager, one council member. We have two members of the uniform, which is one police, one fire employee. And currently on the non-uniform, we have one non-uniform, and we have one vacant employee to serve. And that is just kind of a quick synopsis of, you know, how the membership is compiled on the pension board. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I'm happy to ask questions, but I'm trying to determine what's actually before us. What action are you wanting us to take? And I think I know Mr. Clay's light is on. You're welcome to ask your question, or you may want to have this one answered first.
That was my question, actually. Okay. What is it you wish us to do with this information?
Honorable Mayor and council members, the major issue of concern is whether you want the employee representatives that are voted in to remain indefinitely. That was changed
2012.
Before that, I believe that the employee representatives had a four-year term, and then they could represent the employees indefinitely, but they would need to be voted in every 4 years. That, for some reason, was changed to where now the employee, after a vote is received, no other vote is taken, and that person serves indefinitely. So it's the question is whether you want that requirement to remain in place, or whether you believe that the employees should have the right to select their representative every 4 years.
And this is brought about most recently because one of the non-uniform members retired. And so now we have a vacancy. And so someone was just looking at the ordinance, if you will, and determining, okay. I guess I'm maybe the only one who was on in 2012, but I don't think I remember this one at all. I'm not sure what the logic was for it. I also don't know exactly how the elections have frankly ever occurred for either the non-uniform. On the uniform, do they pick or do they vote, or how does that work?
Mayor Crow, but my understanding is they sent out an email, just a group email, and ask for who would like to serve on the board. And so then they have, say, four or five nominees. So then there's another email will go out, and all employees non-uniform will send in their votes, and they'll vote for their peers on who they would like to serve. And I guess it would be, my understanding is, you know, whoever gets the most votes.
And I guess I'm going to ask, is this a, and I don't mean this in any way in a flippant way, is this a robust election where you have a number of candidates, or is it more one or two people who are normally applying? Because I honestly have no idea.
I honestly don't recall how it really.
The only thing I would tend to say, and again, I'm happy to be voted down on this, is I would tend to think that it seems the more democratic way for you to be elected and then for you to serve a term and then to be reelected, instead of just having a position to sort of just, once you have it, you have it. I would tend to think that would be something that I don't think there's going to be a ton of contested elections necessarily. I think Mr. McMahon could attest to the fact that these are not the most riveting meetings at times when we're walking through the beneficiary statements and the investment returns and the actuarial study. So I'm not sure how many people necessarily want to be out, but I would tend to think that unless Mr. Rose or unless Keith or John has some other reason that we wanted this to be a kind of a permanent thing, we'd probably want it to have an election like the rest of the, like the most every other position. Anyone else? Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't go back to a four-year term. As it relates to this process, this is just a presentation. Will this be a voting item later? Is that what?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Clay, if there seems to be consensus, the intention would be to have an agenda item placed on your regular meeting that would, an ordinance that would change the term period back to prior to 2012 when it was changed.
So I guess my only question would be, like the mayor, instinctively, a four-year term in which employees have the opportunity to vote on their peers sounds right, but is there a compelling reason why it should be indefinite? And I have to admit my own ignorance as it relates to this particular process.
I mean, I really don't. I mean, there's no advantage. I mean, I guess the only drawback is if someone is on the board, then they're on the, you know, they serve indefinitely. So then that, to me, that if someone else would like to serve, then they don't get the opportunity to serve. That's not how I would see it.
And I would just add, if someone even just wanted to compete to serve, they don't have that opportunity because the term is indefinite.
Yeah, my thought is that we would probably want there to be an election. But again, I think if you bring the ordinance up in that way, I think we can take a vote at that time to see. I think the only thing, and I'm trying to think just in my conversations when I was the liaison, I think the only thing that would be a detriment, and it's really not a huge one, is there is a benefit on the pension board to institutional knowledge of how things have been handled before. I can't remember the gentleman who had been the police rep forever and the fire rep forever. It was one of those things that they had a lot of institutional knowledge that some of the rest of us didn't have because they'd crossed that bridge before. And so there is a benefit there, but I don't think it outweighs in any way the desire to have people have the opportunity to serve if they would like to serve. Anything else on this item? John.
Mayor, members of the council, when the ordinance that Mr. Cole cited was passed in October of 2012, at the same time, two sections of the code should have been amended to be in harmony, but they were not. So you have in the same chapter of the code, 120, you've got 120.130 and 120.140, that still state that the boards are 9-member boards. So so if legislation is brought before the council, I would recommend that those two sections of the code be brought up to the same standard as in the other section or sections. And those two sections that I just mentioned, 120.130 and 120.140, both specify a term of 4 years. So right now we've got a conflict in the code, but under the law, the later ordinance is presumed to be the legislative intent. So that's what we're operating under. And that is that there are 11 members and the employee members serve indefinitely rather than 4 years.
And were the two additional members at that time were the, I know you went from 9 to 11, but two of us, if you will, don't vote. But who were the two slots? Was it one more employee or what?
Two citizens.
It was two more citizens. Okay.
It was going from five citizens to seven.
Okay. Thank you. Sounds like there's a little bit of cleanup to do if we bring in a new ordinance forward. Okay. Anything else on this one?
Here, that concludes our presentation.
And then is there anything, I know that Keith has a long presentation during our regular session. Are there any parts of that, since we've got 25 minutes, that we could even do any Q&A on ahead of time? I mean, I understand he needs to make the presentation during the public session, but I'm just curious, since he's got a long presentation, if there's any Q&A we can do. Is that totally inappropriate? And I'm okay to hear the word yes, it's inappropriate. Any idea, John? I was just trying to think, I know Mr. Cole has a long presentation during our regular session tonight, and he can make the presentation during it, but there, is there any opportunity that we could even do some of the Q&A now? Because I mean, to me, we've and get out of to my colleagues. I like you all, but we've got a good 20 minutes, and it'd be kind of we could. Gregor, are you okay with that? Colleagues, would anyone?
I'm just want wondering to, logistics.
If is there an issue with that? Yeah, I apologize. I don't want to. Correct. And if there are members of the public that are here to ask, I'd be more. I think we could. Again, Mr. Cole could make his presentation even during the meeting, but I think he's got the longest part. So it could be some of the Q&A could be, is that fair to, I don't want to speak for Mr. Cole.
I believe that two things. One is Mr. Cole's presentation. I think he's going to move that along, hitting the highlights on most of the pages. And secondly, I believe we'd be happy to respond to any questions that you had regarding the information in the packet now and conduct the presentation when it is scheduled.
With the information, I'm sorry, Mr. Clay has your mic. Mr. Clay.
Mayor Crow, I just had a question. If a member of the public was wanting to hear this presentation, including our questions, do we get in a situation if we start doing stuff now? That's my only question.
We easily could not, and I'm happy to wait. That's why I was saying, I think Mr. Cole would still need to make his presentation clearly during the 6:30 session. It was just, there was an awful lot of information there, I didn't know if my colleagues had particular questions you may want to ask him now. I can tell you, I don't have a long list, so it's not necessarily me, and I'm happy to wait, so. Doesn't seem to be a movement afoot that we need to move it forward. So we will simply leave it where it is and start at 6:30. So the study session is adjourned, and we will pick back up at 6:30.